Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back here to Mornings with Carmen. I am not Carmen LaBurge. I am Dr. Peter Kapsner, back in the host role for just a morning here as Carmen gets a well-deserved day off, and back in studio with Paul Perreault as well, enjoying
you
my time with all of
Carmen.
You.
She doesn't shave her head.
She does not shave her head. This is a fashion choice that I've made, Paul. I could easily grow out a big mop of hair still if I really wanted to, and if I
on
prayed hard enough, I'm on the side and swoop it over the top, indeed. Well, delightful to be with all of you as well listening. If you want to join the show at any point this morning, I'd love to hear from you. You can call or text into the studio at 877-933-2484. And Paul, one of the things I love about being back, just involved on different levels, whether it's as a guest or substituting for a day, is to participate in the long story that is Faith Radio. And before getting involved, I didn't know how long the story actually was. And we're talking about celebrating a 70th anniversary this weekend as a radio station. And at the risk of being overly self-referential this morning and sort of patting ourselves on the back, I think what I'd want to reference is that in these 70 years, we say it, and it's a cliche, but it's true. God has been so incredibly faithful, mm-hmm. but it speaks to a faithfulness that goes well beyond 70 years. I mean, at the end of the day, 70 years is a mere blip in this unbelievable redemptive story of God, and it really has been an amazing opportunity for a place like Faith Radio to participate in its own small way in this ever-redemptive story.
It actually would have been longer if it wasn't for World War II.
Yeah, right. Tell us about
that. Because the plans were in place even before World War II. William Bell Riley, the founder of Northwestern Schools, he had the vision of radio back in the 30s, and the paperwork is in place, but because of the war and there was the rationing of steel and such, it just couldn't be done. But when Billy Graham put it on the air 70 years ago this past February, wow. And then people have been supporting it through the years. It's been entirely a listener-supported venture from the get-go.
Yeah, it really, and we're so appreciative of all the support given, of course, and we just pray every morning, too, before the show even starts, that there would be a ministry and a mission of God's Spirit moving among us in this world to just simply participate humbly in this larger story, because there is a kingdom that knows no end. It's part of what we talk about often here as the Faith Radio Network. And so just before going to Adam Holtz and talking about some of the movies and some of the music and literature out there, let me read again a quote that speaks to the hope of Easter that we're coming close up to celebrating. It's a quote from Clarence Hall that says this, that the resurrection of Jesus at Easter changes the face of death for all his people. Death is no longer a prison, but a passage into God's presence. Easter says that you can put truth in a grave, but it won't stay there. You can nail it to a cross, you can wrap it up in winding sheets and shut it up in a tomb, but it will rise. And so we celebrate again that this morning, and wherever we're listening and part of this journey of following Jesus, that we are part of an eternal kingdom, 70 years Faith Radio, but an eternal kingdom that knows no end. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm substituting for the day Dr. Peter Kapsner in the host chair for one morning, and delighted to be joined by Adam Holtz, our good friend from PluggedIn.com. And Adam, even though I'm no longer doing the morning show day in and day out, you are still my go-to site for me and my family for some really good insight in some of the movies and what we can expect before we go, so we know what to talk to our kids about as we're maybe watching the movie and afterwards. So great to hear your voice again. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so, you know, I find, Adam, that the Avengers series really has my attention right now for some reason. I'm very much looking forward to the next part of the Infinity War saga, but we had a little backstory come out into the theaters this last week in Captain Marvel. We saw it on the second night that it was available in the theaters, and I'll at least, you know, a little spoiler alert for me, I loved it. I thought it was great, but do you need to talk me off the ledge on this? Is there something I was missing?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that the appeal of superhero stories is they're characters that we can relate to, but obviously they have superpowers. And I think the genius of the Marvel Universe is it has given us pretty three-dimensional characters. You know, we get characters who doubt. We get characters who have real, you know, character flaws. Tony Stark has a ton of them. And, you know, Spider-Man has his foibles and the Hulk. I mean, you can just go down the list. And I think that what Marvel has done is really, you know, taken that 40, 50, 60-year history of some of these characters and put it in a way that that's very appealing, both to new fans, maybe like yourself, and old fans. I've been reading The Avengers since the 1970s. So it's been a blast to see it come to the screen with the caveat that, you know, it's pretty violent, most of these movies, and even if that's bloodless violence or implied violence, the body count is often pretty high, and a number of them have, you know, a little sexual innuendo and a little profanity, and so those have been the issues that have kept us from allowing my oldest, who's now 12, to see those movies until fairly recently we've begun to inch towards the PG-13 barrier coming down. I won't say we've been totally perfect in that, but you know, those are the main things that parents need to be aware of if you're not already familiar with these movies.
Yeah, I have a 13-and-a-half-year-old at home, Adam, and that's when we introduced the first movie of the Avengers. It wasn't the first in the Avengers, but we introduced him to Thor because there just was maybe enough things in there that weren't so difficult, and you could turn away at other moments in the movie. But getting back to Captain Marvel for just a moment, I mean, this is really – she's sort of Katniss Everdeen from the Hunger Games series on, like, major superpowers. This is feminine heroine. This is the first time we've seen a female lead in the Avengers series, and, boy, she really busted out the box in that deal.
No, she did, and she's a character that has tremendous power. I mean, just in a nutshell, she's a character who comes from another galaxy. She is a Kree, and she's fighting a war against the Skrulls. The Skrulls are these sort of weird-looking, in their normal form, aliens that can shapeshift into all kinds of forms, and that battle, through a series of events, lands her on Earth, and she realizes she didn't know it, but she has more connection with Earth than she really understood. And so in some ways, this movie, maybe more than others, perhaps because she's a character that is less familiar. I mean, really, the whole movie is an origin story. You could say it's a prelude to, you know, her obvious involvement in the upcoming Avengers Endgame movie, which the new trailer dropped, I believe, yesterday, and she's in it. So, you know, we know that she's going to play a major role in sort of, you know, evening out the scales against Thanos, who's a super baddie who just caused half the creatures in the universe to turn to dust. So I'm curious to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, looking to get to my tickets to that soon in terms of some of the advanced purchases. And Adam, one more point in this movie that I found kind of interesting in having watched a lot of the Avengers movies is that there seemed to be more of a humanism involved with her, in the sense that there's a humanity. The interaction she had with Samuel Jackson, who is reprising his role as a young Nick Fury, yeah, it was incredible how what they did to him in terms of making him look like he's 30 years old, and the two of them talking back and forth, there was like genuine laughter, it felt like, between them. There's interactions with her old friends as she got reoriented to her previous life, these sorts of things. That was a little unique for Avengers in my mind, in the sense that it tends to be the sort of witty repartee dialogue between maybe a Thor and a Captain America or something. There seemed to be a bit of substance there in the relationships.
Yeah, no, I think that substance is there, and I think that we have seen glimpses of that throughout. Again, even going back to Tony Stark, we've seen his character development away from being just this total arrogant playboy to a slightly less arrogant, more faithful hero, you know? And the new trailer that just came out shows him recording this message to Pepper Potts back on Earth, and we see her weeping. And so, you know, I think that if we're looking for a happy end to balance out the last Avengers movie, I'm not sure we're going to get that. I think it's going to be another one that's heavy, and we've seen some hints that it's going to round out this iteration of the Marvel Cinematic Universe as it's known. But, yeah, I think Captain Marvel is another example where they've really done a good job with that very human character development.
Yeah, and with $150 million in the opening weekend, I know it sort of blew through some of the expectations. I can't imagine what opening weekend for Endgame is going to look like.
No, it's going to be a record breaker, and that probably will be a prelude to the record breaker of Star Wars Episode 9, which comes out right before Christmas. So, I mean, it's Disney sort of has a lock on the money this year, I think.
Yeah, no question. They seem to have bought up everybody. Well, I see that speaking of Disney, there's another animated movie out, not necessarily from Disney, but called Wonder Park. And yeah. I know anytime we see a trailer for an animated movie, I've got young enough kids that I assume I'm going to find myself in the theater. But is this one worth seeing, Adam?
Yeah, it is worth seeing. this is a really nice movie, and it's got a really wide release. It's in like 3,300 theaters, but it's flown a little bit under the radar, probably because it's not Pixar. This is a movie about a little girl named June, who is precocious, has an amazing imagination. She and her mom have imagined her stuffed animals building an amusement park, which they call Wonderland, and it's a very thinly veiled reference to Disneyland. And her mom, as so often happens to moms in animated movies, it's not good to be a mom in an animated movie. She gets sick, and she has to go away for treatment. And June has to deal with some very adult things. All of a sudden, her idyllic world kind of comes crashing down. She has to help her now functional single dad with things, and he's sort of a typical single dad. She is dealing with loss. She's dealing with fear. She's dealing with uncertainty about whether her mom will be okay or not. And then she's sort of magically transported into a real-world version of this amusement park that she and her mom have imagined, and she sees the influence of her fear and how it's affecting people there, and the characters that she has imagined sort of help her back toward a place of hope and optimism. So in some ways it reminded me a lot of Pixar's Inside Out, and it deals with some themes that I think are pretty parallel to that, fear and loss and growing up. But the good news here is there's really very little content-wise that's an issue. A few scenes are a little bit intense, but I took my 12 and 10 and 8-year-old without blinking to this one. I mean, it really was not something that I thought, oh, man, we made a mistake with this. And thankfully, it's free of the kind of toilet humor and cheap gags that we so often see, even in animated kids' stuff. So that was super refreshing. There's one character, a little boy who is of Indian ancestry, and he at one point says, "Thank Krishna," which is a Hindu god. Honestly, that one throwaway line might have been the biggest content issue in this whole movie for me. I mean, there's just not much here that is too problematic. So, lovely movie, one that you can take your family to and have a good time with.
I love it. Well, I'll definitely take my 8, 11, 13-year-old, and it's fun. Even our 17 and 19-year-olds sure love these animated movies. I find it as an excuse, though, for me, because I still love them at 48 here, Adam.
Yeah, well, and there's a lot to talk about in this one. You know, I think, if anything, some of the themes about loss and those things that we go through may be lost on, like, an 8-year-old, but I think an 11 and a 13-year-old actually would be able to process those themes really well. So there's a good bit here to talk about afterwards if you want to.
It's Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. Adam, we'll head to a short break, and we come back here next. I'd love to get your thoughts on a pretty interesting and compelling blog that Justin Bieber wrote about depression and about how stars do deal with depression just like normal people do and what we can learn from that. So we'll talk about that next year on Mornings with Carmen with Adam Holtz. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. Paul Perreault has been playing a bit of Irish music, it seems, all morning. Adam, anything you're doing for St. Paddy's Day this weekend?
Oh, I will probably just make sure I have a green shirt on, or my children will probably pinch me to the point where I'll go to the doctor and they'll wonder if I'm being abused at home.
I love it. So no corned beef and cabbage for you this weekend, Adam. Is that what you're saying?
There's a lot of things you can do to prepare beef, but corned beef's probably not my favorite. And cabbage I've never really understood. So there you go.
Go for the Reuben, man. Go for the Reuben.
I love it.
Yeah, maybe so.
It's Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com. And Adam, a pretty interesting blog coming out from Justin Bieber. And I know certainly in my own classrooms over the last 10 years or so, I've seen just a substantial exponential rise in depression and anxiety. And Bieber wrote this about his own journey. He said, "Just wanted to keep you guys updated a little bit. Hopefully what I'm going through, I've been struggling a lot, feeling super disconnected and weird. I always bounce back, so I'm not worried, but wanted to reach out and ask for you guys to pray for me. God is faithful. This is the most human season I've ever been in, facing my stuff head on." And boy, this just speaks to an entire culture that does really seem to be wrestling on some level with depression and anxiety.
Yeah, it does. You know, we see a lot of studies that are coming out that, especially among young people, as you mentioned, all of the statistical and scientific evidence shows that there has just been a huge surge in teens who are reporting mental health issues. Depending on which survey you look at, it's somewhere between 1 in 5 and 1 in 7. So, you know, we're talking about 20% of the population identifies this as something that they're wrestling with. And you know, I think, Peter, culturally, even though this is happening, depression and anxiety and mental health are still issues that have a lot of stigma attached to them. We feel shame. It's easy to feel isolation. I'll go on record here saying that I've wrestled with depression for most of my adult life. I'm currently taking, you know, an antidepressant to help level that out for me. I've had counseling with pastors, and so it's an issue that I deal with, but I know even personally getting to the point where I could say that without feeling like, ugh, I'm somehow a failure, there's something really deeply deficient in me, it's kind of embarrassing, it's kind of shameful. And that's not where I'm at now, but that certainly was where I was at in my 20s. And so just personally, when I see somebody like Justin Bieber really talking openly about this, it's a hopeful thing for me, because I think that our role models, when they actually are functioning as role models, they give us permission to talk about stuff that maybe we wouldn't want to talk about. And so my hope is that when Justin and others like him, Demi Lovato is another one who's talked at length, even though she's had a rough go recently, when they talk openly about this, they give permission to young fans to say, oh, you know what? I need help with this. This is something that I don't want to deal with on my own anymore.
What? And I appreciate your vulnerability in that too, Adam, because I think there can be this sort of misnomer that if you love God and follow Jesus, that you're not going to struggle with this stuff, and you can end up feeling like a failure. But boy, the world's a tricky place. It's a hard place, and we're in a bit of exile. There's no question that the world is not easy, and so it'd be unusual if we don't at least struggle with this stuff to some degree. And to your point, I know Kevin Love of the Cleveland Cavaliers recently came out in the NBA culture and showed quite a bit of vulnerability of his own journey, saying, I really wrestle hard with depression, and that's in a context where, you know, there's a lot of machismo and a lot of just sort of power through and suck it up, and it was really an interesting revelation from him as well.
Yeah, and you know, you would think in a culture as affluent with as many resources as ours has, that this wouldn't be an issue anymore. But in some ways, I think paradoxically, it's just the opposite, that the more stuff we have, the more, you know, screens we have, the more social media we have, the more there's an opportunity to compare our lives to other people and say, we don't measure up. And there's been there's a growing body of research that shows that when we engage in social media and online stuff, that it really causes us to feel worse about our own lives. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing a real surge in this. So again, anytime we have a celebrity say, hey, I'm there too, I think it legitimizes it, and it opens a door for people to be honest about that themselves.
You know, and Adam, your very vocation requires you to be on screens in some levels and at some times. And are there things that you do just to help moderate some of that? Are there things you do? I know you've got a billion kids at home as well. Are there things that you do with your kids to kind of help moderate some of that influence and impact of the screen?
Honestly, you know, I'm going to just be honest again and say it's not perfect, Peter.
Yeah.
I like
yep.
screens as much as the next person. And I have times where I think I'm really aware of that and try to put them away and just be present. And I think that's the thing with our screen-based culture, is that it can really creep into everything. And so we need to make time and space to intentionally carve out places where this isn't a part of our lives. We don't do screens at dinner. We try not to double screen, which is watching a movie while being on a phone or a Switch or a Kindle or an iPad at the same time. And we try to really alternate, you know, when we have screen time to say, okay, it's time to take a break. Let's do some reading. Let's go play some piano, some guitar. Let's play a game. So I think just being tuned into how much screen time your kids are getting and setting limits and boundaries and trying to make sure that you engage in things outside of that is really, really important.
Yeah, we just have a couple minutes left here, but we had recently had quite a bit of snowfall in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and it was really fun to watch my three youngest go outside with a lot of sticky snow, and they built an old-school snow fort that they managed to put a roof on even as an igloo. And Adam, it was one of those moments when I realized, again, you don't need to have a screen to be entertained necessarily, but I forget
right.
that. They didn't even want to come in for dinner. We called them in. It was dark outside. They're like, we got to get this roof on our igloo done, and it was really fun to see them come to life in some really interesting and important ways just being outside like that.
And yesterday my kids played with clay and made clay dice and clay Pokemon creatures and then baked them in the oven. And so it was a similar kind of thing. I love seeing them just be imaginative in ways that don't involve technology really at all.
Well, you can't reference Pokemon like that, Adam. If my kids are listening, I'm going to get home and say, Dad, we got to go to Holtz's house right now to play some Pokemon.
Well, you know, we prob- probably could play some Pokemon whatever iteration you want. We're looking forward to the movie that's coming out here soon, and we'll be able to talk about that when that happens.
I love it. Well, great to chat with you again, Adam. Love the work that you do at PluggedIn.com, and I hope you have a great weekend ahead and have some corned beef and cabbage.
Oh, we'll see about that. Great weekend, yes. Corned beef and cabbage, probably not.
Great. Well, more to come here on Mornings with Carmen. We'll talk with Chris Martin next about some ways in which we can sort of protect ourselves from the kind of information that Google is trying to glean from us all day long and some safety in the internet. So more to come. Stay tuned with Mornings with Carmen. Appreciate that breakpoint and the idea that we can do a both and as we're helping prepare our next generation as part of this great kingdom of which we are part that knows no end, that there can be real significant academic rigor and getting the credentials necessary from a vocational standpoint, but to do so within a distinctly Christian worldview, because that really is the kingdom that will persist and remain. And it's part, Paul, of what we're celebrating here this weekend at Faith Radio as part of our 70th anniversary. And listeners, if you're listening this morning, there's ways in which you can join the celebration. There's a pretty big event happening tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night here at the University of Northwestern. So mainly if you're in the Twin Cities, I believe still some tickets available. So just go to our website. The information is there, myfaithradio.com.
Yeah, part of what we're going to see tomorrow night is Bill Arnold and his Triple Espresso crew. They're not doing Triple Espresso itself, but they're doing an act as part of this. And I would imagine it's going to be hysterical.
Oh, anytime you're around those guys, you're going to laugh.
Yeah, I've had so much fun being back part of the Bill Arnold show in the afternoon, joining him once a week. And he really just has this delightful blend of faith and insight and wisdom with a great degree of humor. Yeah, it makes me laugh. So if you're anywhere close to the Twin Cities and want to join us tomorrow night as part of the celebration, we would love to have you as part of the 70th anniversary of Faith Radio.
Even the most calm and collected people get angry sometimes. So when does a teen's anger cross the line from ordinary to alarming? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Outbursts of anger are something that almost all teens indulge in from time to time. It's just the nature of the beast. And while that doesn't mean we have to accept or follow it, sometimes it's a relief just to know that your teen isn't the only one struggling. So when does adolescent fury call for immediate attention? I recommend taking action when his outbursts include profanity and show extreme disrespect, if he shows defiance to the standards and values of the home, or if he gets physical with any member of the family. Has your teen's rage gone beyond normal boundaries? Mom, Dad, don't be afraid to take a stand.
Learn how to get your teen back on track. Get instant access to Mark's free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am not Carmen LeBurge. I am Dr. Peter Kapsner filling in for the day for Carmen, who's got a well-deserved day off this morning. We're joined at this time by Chris Martin of Lifeway Social, who's a regular contributor to the show and helps us understand some of the different ways in which young people in the millennial generation are experiencing their world through the lens of faith, through the lens of technology, through the lens of relationships. Chris, always great to have you on the program here.
Yeah, good to be back, man.
So I'm curious. I set up a Google Mesh network in my house. I had to actually Google what a mesh network was. I wasn't entirely sure, but I was entirely dissatisfied with our internet speed in our house. So I figured this would probably help. But now we've got these sort of, you know, bandwidth waves coursing through our house. Is Google somehow listening in through all of this deal as well?
Well, I applaud you for doing that, because that's widely regarded as one of the best home internet networks that you can have nowadays, which is pretty awesome that you're able to do that. I wish I had actually had the technical know-how on how to do that, because I personally don't know what makes it so much better than what I have, though I'm sure it does. So kudos to you on that.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I just made it up, basically. I just sort of plugged in some stuff and hoped is what my technological prowess was in that deal.
Right, sure. So there's a recent article released by the Axios News organization. They're actually releasing a series of these. This one's called What Google Knows About You. They're going to do others, I think, like What Facebook Knows About You and a couple others. I forget exactly what the other ones are. But in their article, What Google Knows About You, I love how Axios does their news stories, because they just make them very easy to read just in how they format them and things like that. But they just kind of list what Google collects and what Google does not collect. So for your to ease your mind, on the list of what Google does not collect, or so we think, right? There's always that that underlying, like, well, this is what we say they don't collect. At least we don't think they collect it, as far as we know. So what Google does not collect from us is the data from Google Docs and those of us who use the paid enterprise version. So at Lifeway, we have like an enterprise account with Google Docs. They do not read what is in those Google Docs. Now, that says that perhaps they do read what's in the non-business accounts of Google Docs, but that's another conversation entirely. They do not collect the internet traffic from their Google Wi-Fi home router. So, Peter, I think you're in the clear, as long as we trust this article to be true. And they do not collect the content of our emails in Gmail either, which is nice. But what does Google collect is maybe another question listeners may be wondering. What does Google know about me? I mean, Google, the internet just turned 30 years old last week or earlier this week. The internet turned 30 years old. Now, most of us don't remember using the internet 30 years ago because in the home, it really came in about 25 or maybe even 20 years ago for a lot of us is when it really came into our homes. But the internet came about 30 years ago and Google came about about 20-ish years ago. For many of us, Google has just become synonymous with the internet, right? Just Google it, or you know, Google never used to be a verb. Even when I was in elementary school, Google was kind of a new thing. So what does Google collect? Google collects the terms we search for. Google collects the videos we watch so they can tell what videos we're watching. Google collects the voice and audio information that we use, that we say when we use their audio features, like their version of Siri or things like that. The Hey Google, they collect those things. They collect purchase activity, the people with whom we communicate or share content, the activity on sites and apps that use Google services, the ads and content we view on their sites, as well as how we interact with that content. They collect your browsing history when you've synced up your Google account, and all your location data, whether via GPS or IP addresses or Wi-Fi routers you may be using. They can track kind of where you're at. Google knows, likely because of how we use it, how most people use it, Google probably knows where your home is because they can tell where you return each day, or they can tell when you go to the grocery store and come back. They understand that you're going to the store and coming home rather than going home and coming back to the grocery store. They're able to tell where you live. So Google knows a lot about us, and it can be concerning for many people, as I've had conversations.
Yeah, Chris, I you know, excuse my skepticism, but I have to believe that even in those places where they're claiming a bit of privacy in our lives, it's hard for me to believe that it actually would be private. And I sometimes think, what would it be like if we could access all of the data that Google has on ourselves? I mean, it seems like they could build sort of a pixelated cloned image avatar of me just based on all that information.
Oh, they 100% could. If depending on how deeply you use Google and any of these platforms, Facebook or otherwise, they can build a persona of exactly who you are. I mean, marketers, people in the marketing industry rely on this technology to build sort of customer personas. So like if someone is creating a new product, Samsung wants to make a new refrigerator, they could work with Google data or Facebook data to figure out what are the features people want most in their next refrigerator. Do they want a television? Do they want French doors or not? Do they, you know, they can use this research, this data that these companies have is arguably their most valuable asset. There's a phrase that's gone around recently that data is the new oil. Now, I don't think that's not a good comparison, because data we're continually producing and creating and harvesting. Oil is it's a fossil fuel. It's by nature. We're using it as we use it. It goes away, kind of a thing, at a faster rate than we can produce it anyway. So they're not exactly the same, but it is the same. It's a good analogy. Data is the new oil, in that it's one of the most valuable resources in the world today, and that some of the world's largest companies are built on funds, on money that is harvested through this means, data versus oil. And so a company like Google relies on collecting customer data, on user data, in order to sell. Not like, hey, you want to know what Peter Kapsner has been up to? Here, let us sell you his profile. They don't do things like that. At least to our knowledge, you can't just like put in an order for someone's Google persona per se. But if you said, hey, I would like to create an advertisement that I want to deliver on a Google search to everyone who's searched for French door refrigerators in the last 6 months, you could do that. And so we can kind of, in an anonymous way, people who work in marketing or other sales sort of industries can say, okay, we want to target everyone who has who's been taking this action or who lives in this place based on the data that they've submitted to these companies. And then people could try to sell you products based on that. What thankfully we've seen is that someone cannot just say, hey, I want to see what I want to see what Chris Martin's entire Google profile looks like. That data is not, you know, given up by Google willingly. Surely someone could hack someone's stuff and get into that, but that kind of stuff's not given up quite freely in that organized way. So that is a comforting truth amidst all this uncertainty.
Well, certainly I want to have my privacy protected, but if somebody wanted to ask my opinion about our refrigerator at home, Chris, it is a French door refrigerator, but the water spigot and ice dispenser is the single worst design thing I've ever seen. Anytime you go to it, you're pouring water all over the floor. So Google can happily have that information. I'd love to get into next, after a short break, a little bit about how Facebook is navigating this as well, because you reference them, and they certainly have been bludgeoned in the news over the last 12 months for all of these data breaches and sort of where they're going philosophically as a company to help protect our data. So let's get into that next with Chris Martin here on Mornings with Carmen. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am substituting for Carmen today, Dr. Peter Kapsner, as Carmen is taking a well-deserved Friday off. And we're chatting with Chris Martin from Lifeway Social about some of the different ways in which we can protect ourselves as we participate in the internet. And Chris, we referenced before break that Facebook really has taken quite a few hits and punches from a lot of different directions about a lot of privacy data breaches. And it sure sounds like Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, has come out recently and is going to be putting a more significant emphasis on privacy moving forward.
Yeah, one of the most common topics I feel like you and I have talked about in the last year or so has been all of the privacy breaches at Facebook, whether that be data breaches, which has definitely been some of it, but also just the way Facebook conducts itself lends its users to, at least its users who pay attention to these kinds of things, which is not the majority of Facebook users, but the people who pay attention to these sorts of things has made us really not trust Facebook with a whole lot. It's made us not trust them with our pictures or with our videos or with our interactions via Messenger or otherwise. All kinds of things from, like just the other day, I was talking with someone, about a product. I forget even what it was, but we were talking about it. And then, the next day, I started receiving Instagram ads with products related to that that thing we were talking about in my Instagram feed, and I'm like, I've never Googled this before, I've never clicked on anything related to this before, or anything like that. I think we were talking about like shoe insoles, right? And I had not been Googling those things or anything like that, but then I got an Instagram ad just like 12 hours after having a conversation about shoe insoles with a friend, and I'm like, what? They're clearly listening to me. And so little things like that have made us not trust Facebook, and then Instagram, which is owned by Facebook and has been for a number of years now. But Mark Zuckerberg, as we enter 2019, really wants to change kind of the philosophy of Facebook. So social media, for people in the industry like myself, we recognize that social media is becoming increasingly private. And what we mean by that is people are drifting away from posting as publicly via platforms like Facebook or things like that, and are drifting more toward private interactions on Instagram Direct Messenger or Facebook Messenger or Snapchat. People are becoming more interested in interacting with one-on-one with a friend through Facebook Messenger, for instance, or interacting with a group of friends via a sort of group message experience on any of these different platforms. The appeal is interacting on a more personal level with a smaller group of friends rather than posting something out in the world for everyone to see. Now, there are a number of theories you come up with why this transition has been made or why people are changing. That's not the subject of our discussion. The subject of our discussion is how are social media platforms adapting to this? And Facebook has decided that this aligns nicely with their desire to put to become more secure, or at least put up a front of being more secure. So they have said, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook's vision and principles around building a privacy-focused messaging system are changing. So they want to start putting, because Facebook is recognizing their users are more interested in privacy than they have been in the past, and because they're recognizing their users are more interested in sending individual messages to friends than they have in the past, they want to adapt to that. So that it's a smart business decision from their perspective in one sense, and it's also a smart kind of PR decision, and that it makes them look more interested in privacy than they have been in the past. Now, this they've said that this will hurt them in terms of advertising revenue and things like that, which it will, but it ultimately will be good. And what they want to do is Mark Zuckerberg and the folks at Facebook, the heads of Facebook, they want to make Facebook Messenger specifically, and they own WhatsApp, which is used more internationally than in the United States, and Instagram Direct Messenger. They want to make sure all of this data is encrypted. They want to make sure that no one has to be concerned about if someone tries to like look into their Facebook messages or their WhatsApp messages or whatever. They don't want people to be concerned that they're going to somehow get leaked or hacked, or even if they're not sending anything malicious. I mean, people are just concerned about privacy. They don't want, you know, Facebook or some bad actor to be able to access what the private things they're sending to their friends and family. And so they want to increase the encryption, or kind of the scrambling of that data, so that people can't just like grab it out of the cloud. They also want to reduce permanence, which is a fancy tech way of saying they want to make messages disappear, or at least be able to be easily deleted. People don't want stuff to exist on the internet forever anymore, as maybe they have in the past. We've seen the negative effects of that for a lot of people who have had old tweets dug up because of things they've said when they were 15, and now they would never say today when they're 25, but because they said it on Twitter 10 years ago, people are assuming that they're the same person today as they were then, and things like that. So Facebook is just really adapting and really changing their philosophy toward an emphasis on private interactions via Messenger and away from newsfeed. Now, that doesn't mean our new Facebook newsfeeds are going away. They would never get rid of that. They would cease to exist because they would lose all their money. But they do want to – you will see an increased emphasis as you use Facebook more in the next year or two or even beyond that toward the private interaction of Facebook Messenger, which is an interesting development that I think we should be aware of.
It is an interesting evolution for sure, Chris. And we just have a little bit less than a minute left here. But there is still part of me, I got to admit, that's a bit of skeptical about this whole thing. For a business that's predicated on being able to mine out people's data and advertise towards that, it seems to me that they're probably still going to be pushing boundaries to try to get their information about us.
100%. And I would encourage people to not have Facebook Messenger on their phone. I don't. I haven't for at least a year now. There's been proof that they can listen in through your microphone and things like that. So just be careful. Read up on stuff and protect your data, even if you're not concerned about people reading what you say or hearing what you say, because it can set a bad precedent for the future. And you could be protecting your kids or grandkids and the standard you're setting in the generations to come.
Yeah, Chris, certainly appreciate the wisdom and insight, and just that you are engaged in this entire world of technology. And maybe I'm able to set up almost by accident a mesh network, but I certainly don't have the expertise and really lean into people like you who understand what's happening and some of the cautions and maybe some of the overblown, kind of overhyped realities too. So thanks for joining us here on Mornings with Carmen, and look forward to chatting again soon.
Yep, talk to you soon.
Take a break here and wrap up our show for the 15th of March, the Ides of March, Paul Perreault. We'll talk about that coming up next, and get ready for St. Paddy's Day weekend. And that is the Irish music we've been listening to all morning. Paul Perreault, thanks for reminding us again about St. Paddy's Day weekend coming up. And delightful to be with you, to be with all of our listeners again, giving Carmen a well-deserved
for a visit.
Absolutely. Well, so we have acknowledged that maybe corned beef and cabbage for many of us is a more aggressive way of celebrating St. Patrick's Day this weekend. But as you and I were Googling different foods we could potentially look into for Sunday, Irish stew,
that
pretty high on the list.
Up there, yes. A little bit of lamb, the veggies and such. Great stuff.
Oh, you get that thick, hearty stew. It's going to be a little, you know, it's still a little chilly in the Midwest here. It kind of can warm things up.
A little Irish soda bread to dip.
Oh, absolutely. Sounds great. Great way to celebrate, and really fun, again, to celebrate with all of you this morning here on Mornings with Carmen, and celebrate specifically that we really are part of this kingdom that knows no end. And as we celebrate our 70th anniversary for Faith Radio, we're celebrating in the context of a much bigger story, a story of redemption, a story of hope, a story in which God really does walk with us on this journey of faith. Sometimes it's difficult, and sometimes it's hard, but when we gather together like this as believers, it's a place where we really can experience some encouragement and some delight together. So I hope that's what was brought to your day as part of the show. And as you look forward to the weekend, remember you are a part of this kingdom that knows no end.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.